listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery. National speaker Timmery Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember, helping Gen X through Z answer the call to true feminism and authentic manhood. Chris Mueller is a national speaker, author, father of six, and is currently making a Catholic TV show for families as he travels speaking to over 10,000 people each year. Between Chris having over 18 years experience in Catholic lay ministry and Timmery's holding a master's degree in biblical theology, together they cover the week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery.
Hello, my friends. It is so good to be with all of you guys again. We're talking about a couple really interesting things coming up on the show. Why men don't want to date modern women. Chris, they don't want to date modern women.
Yeah, well, I think part of the problem is they're not dating anyone at all. If we're seeing trends, I mean, it's the human species will be extinct soon. It's the end. That's all I'm saying.
They're one with their phone, one with their video games.
One with their internet pornography, unfortunately.
I was being nice there for a second.
I'm just saying.
But it is true. The stimulation is taking place outside of the one-on-one interaction.
Yeah, we used to talk about outside of marriage. Now it's just outside of human beings. It's a weird world we live in now.
You know, I heard recently they're actually talking about banning sex bots, but child sex bots. I'm thinking that's probably a good thing. You know, sex bots should be off limits too, but at least you have some decency to clean that odd fetish up.
Sweet mercy. It's just, the world is weird. I mean, I it's a hard thing to, it's funny, if you duck out of like what's happening in the media and what's going on, and then you duck back in, life has gotten so weird. I mean, even if you just go back 10, 15 years, it would be unimaginable that the world would be the way it is right now. It's weird. I mean, the fact that there's child sex bots is a thing, right? Like, that's a thing.
Well, and to even think about the differences, I was just talking to my mom the other day. My siblings know nothing of speaking on a phone with a cord attached.
I had this discussion with my adolescent often where I'm saying, would you just call a person? Just call them, talk to them. Well, no, nobody likes it and calls out, they text. But the thing is, like, but humans need interaction. We need to hear the tone of another voice. We need to hear the emotional inflection. It's part of understanding and communication. And this generation isn't getting that at all with their friendships.
Boy, just think about all that is assumed, though, within the context of emails and text messaging.
Oh, yeah.
The tone, you assume the tone. I had a friend who's a little older who would send messages, and she would often highlight all caps and underline a lot of her email.
Why are you screaming at me?
And I finally said, you need to stop yelling at me in your emails, and especially at different professional relationships you have. I was copied on the email. They're not going to take it so well.
Right. You know, it's interesting. I was just listening to something on the development of the male brain, and there's a tendency in adolescence, particularly amongst men, that they interpret neutral as aggressive, right? And so if they're looking at faces and there's just a neutral face, they will typically interpret that as aggressive. And so you're reading an email that's neutral language, they're going to interpret that more towards the aggressive or to the anger side. And you wonder, okay, well, we see all of these things happening with school shootings and violence and that stuff. How much of this is because we're not teaching adolescents how to properly digest information? Right? They're reading text constantly or seeing Facebook messages or whatever, and they're interpreting this negativity that's not actually there.
When you said that they're reading things as neutral, I thought of that typical debate between men and women of, I'm fine.
Oh, yeah, exactly. You know, you need to learn the facial expressions and the tone of voice. Very important.
Well, challenge to all of our listeners, maybe take the opportunity this week to pick up the phone. You know, when someone texts you, maybe you don't respond for a day or two. I know I'm one of those people who I leave it unread for a while until I can actually respond. Otherwise, it goes into the abyss of unreplied.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe you are someone who's been on the receiving end of that with text messages. But pick up the phone and call them. Even if it's 5 minutes, I bet you that you will make their day and surprise them.
It's amazing how much you can get done on a phone call.
Right.
A phone call can finish whatever it was you've been emailing back and forth about. A phone call, it's done in like one conversation.
Right. And again, like you said before, you get to hear more of what is behind the voice. And I was reading something the other day and was talking about how every conversation usually begins with a question in one direction or the other, and how when you're listening to people and interacting, you have the opportunity to ask more questions to continue the conversation.
Right. Oh, clarification. I mean, there's just all kinds of reasons that's important. So yeah, absolutely. Pick up the phone.
pick up the phone. So call. Let us know. I would love to hear from you guys. Give us a shout out on Twitter, Instagram. I love the Instagram. And just comment saying, hey, I picked up the phone and talked to my mom. I talked to my friend who lives on the other side of the country who I haven't even seen in 2 years. And I realize I also haven't heard their voice since then.
Oh, yeah. The people who have become Facebook friends but used to be actual friends.
Mm.
Call one.
So true. Well, getting to some of our stories today, Chris, I actually missed this a couple weeks ago in the news. That is, the Miss America contest is changing things up a little bit, and I'm hearing excitement and not so much excitement on both sides.
Yeah, I don't care. I mean, I've been trying to come up with a take for this, but I don't know why this exists. Why is there Miss America pageants? Why is there Miss USA? We used to call them beauty pageants. People don't call them that anymore. And that's what they were. I mean, it's like, I just don't understand why.
Okay, this is what kills me. At the end of the day, specifically talking about Miss America, not Miss USA, because that's totally different. Miss America is a non-for-profit organization, and they're actually focused, although it's a beauty contest, what happens and how you get the job, and a number of the Miss America people have said this, is behind closed doors in an interview holding your resume. Because what the women do after they hold the title of Miss America is they're actually out there fighting against sex trafficking. They're sitting on the deathbed of the elderly. They are doing incredible charitable work, acts of virtue.
And that's all fantastic if the feature wasn't let's parade women around on stage.
Exactly.
Does that make sense? Like, that's the weird part to me.
So that's what's changed. Essentially what's happened is Miss America has finally looked, in light of the Me Too movement and also in light of having more female leadership apparently, which I thought was interesting, they've decided to get rid of not only the bikini and high heels. I mean, come on, you guys.
Yeah, because bikini and high heels is just a common sense outfit. I mean, it's no nonsense. We're going to get things done today.
I'm just going to be really frank. Half of those ladies, I end up looking up a picture of like last year's Miss America contest, the last historic supposed bathing suit competition. They're all sucking it in. And I just think how uncomfortable. You're standing up there in these little high heels and you're sucking in your belly. And I think there was maybe one woman who looked comfortable up there and didn't look like she was having to suck in her abdomen.
How can you be comfortable up there in your high heels in bikini as you're supposed to walk around, you know? And it's not about looks.
It's empowering, Chris.
Oh, absolutely. I don't know. More empowered than when you're up there in yarn and heels, you know.
Yeah. Well, not only are they getting rid of the bathing suits, but they're getting rid of the evening gowns, which I thought was really unfortunate that the evening gowns are so risque. Like, you look at them and there may be one or two that are pleasant looking, really nice. Otherwise, it is just a major cleavage shot and I think getting a little too close to your navel.
I don't know if I've ever seen a Miss America pageant. So it's really hard for me. Like, I'm like, okay, this to me falls under the category, and I know there's the scholarships and there's social justice work they do, but it falls under the same category as a restaurant like Hooters or one of those things, because what they're selling is people, right? Mm-hmm. What the advertisers are buying into is people will watch to see the young ladies walk around and answer questions, but if they're not pretty young ladies, is anyone watching, right? And that's what we're doing. Kudos to them. I'm glad they're getting rid of the swimsuit. I'm glad they're getting rid of the gowns, right? Because it's a parade of women. I just don't know what the show is then, because I just don't understand it.
Well, they're no longer going to be judged based on their looks, apparently, which will be interesting. Some people are upset, saying Miss New Jersey said it completely empowers women to wear bikinis, versus the 2013 Miss America, Mallory Hagan, actually said, no, there is so much discomfort and self-criticism for women that feeds into the fact that women already struggle with body image.
Well, and you look at all the studies that have been done that demonstrate if you have a woman sitting in a bikini in a room by herself, she's more concerned with her appearance. She's more uncomfortable. Even when there's no one looking, she's more self-aware, and it distracts her from doing the tasks that are given to her.
You hit the nail on the head. She's in a room by herself. That's what the studies show.
Right.
And she performs very poorly versus you put a cozy big sweater on her. You sit her down. She takes the same exact test. No one's in the room and she does far better.
Right. And so I guess the argument is, yeah, but you can teach her to be empowered and comfortable with her body. But then I go to the men's studies, and again, where it shows that men are more likely to identify, if you show men pictures of women in bikinis, like basically your body down, they're more likely to identify the woman as an object than a person when they're clothed or when they're unclothed.
They think of power tools essentially as well.
Right.
So it's interesting. Well, here's kind of my take on it. Miss America is no longer going to have this scantily clad evening gowns, nor are they going to use the swimsuits or focusing more on achievement over body, I'm just going to push. That's still not enough. The achievement is fantastic. I'm glad we're shifting, but we need to focus on who the person is. And this gets into the question of modesty. You know, when we're talking to young girls today, are we really empowering them to feel comfortable in what they're wearing, to feel like they're properly dressed for the occasion? And I always think of, you know, the struggle with pornography, which we're going to talk a little bit from the female perspective coming up here in a bit, and how it's leading to a lot of sexting and girls giving into sexting when they don't even want to. So it's consensual but unwanted. But what I think, Chris, is we need to talk about it from the perspective of JP too. He said in Love and Responsibility, the problem with pornography isn't that it reveals too much, it's that it reveals too little.
Right. Oh, absolutely. And our trend toward, I was just at the mall on the way here to do the show, and there's a woman in the store in front of me, and she's, you know, crop top, tight jeans, the whole thing. And the trend seems to be towards more undress. And the problem is, when you're putting yourself in dating relationships or you're trying to meet people, what you're doing is saying, don't know me, see me. Mm-hmm. Right. And, you know, you can be very becoming in a modest outfit. It doesn't have to always be, you know, check out the goods. Mm-hmm. Right? And I feel like that more and more is what we're telling young ladies. That's where you find your value. And they, oh, I'm empowered. Yes, it will give you a power. Right. Yes, you can misuse those gifts to attain power, to get attention. The problem is you're going to find very quickly that you become a slave to that. Mm-hmm. Right. Because the need to retain that power, and it becomes more and more skimpy, and it becomes more and more less and less fulfilling, because people are seeing the outside of you, you know, the form as opposed to the substance of you.
And I know anytime we talk about modesty, people start to cringe. But no, I'm someone who loves clothes, and it's always a challenge to find the right clothes that fit well based on the height, body shape, and so forth. But it's important to make the effort, because I think when you dress how you like and you also dress modestly, you become more of who you're called to be.
Chris and Timmery will be right back. Tweet them at C Mueller Tweets, spelled M-U-E-L-L-E-R, and at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
Wrapping up the thoughts here on the Miss America contest and how they're eliminating the bikini and how they're eliminating the evening gown, judging based on achievement rather than body, you know, practical moments, you know, remember with modesty, whether you're teaching your kids or yourself, dress to the occasion. Where are you going? Is it appropriate to wear what you're wearing to the beach, to wear to mass?
I'm going to say this. America looks pretty bad right now.
Oh my gosh. Okay. I feel like we've gone back to the 90s with, you know, the really ugly baggy pants and, you know, the quarter tops, basically. Like, you know, my mom would never let me show my midriff.
Well, and it's because there is no sense of dressing to occasion. Every outfit is for every occasion. Uh-huh. And so I think we all kind of look like slobs, right? And mm-hmm. It sounds so silly, but like, you go to an amusement park at Disneyland or at Disney World, and you're paying an outrageous amount of money, and you see people walking around in dirty t-shirts. And it's kind of like, dude, I just paid a fortune to get my seven, you know, the eight people into this park, right? And then I get here and I'm with your pit stained shirt walking by me. It's come on, man. Like, there's, or airplanes. Airplanes used to be, you kind of get dressed up for the trip because you're going to be amongst a bunch of different people. And now it's, everybody's in their pajamas, right? And it's just, I don't want to sit next to you in your pajamas. And gosh darn it, no, men, tank tops are not allowed on airplanes. No.
Especially if you're going to be sweating. That's so true, though. Let's get back to that. It used to be that flying was a momentous occasion and you would dress up. Part of it is because they thought they might die as well, but I mean, it was a momentous occasion.
It's, you still could. I just think there's something about dressing in a way that is appropriate to where you are, and that gives respect to what's happening. And again, flying, I get wanting to be comfortable on an airline. I get it, right? But again, going out with your family, you want to look nice because you're going to have pictures that you're going to take, right?
You know, and I think for some reason, sometimes this makes more sense to guys than it does to women. I remember I was speaking last fall at an event, and there are a bunch of middle school kids, and it just dawned on me. I had a really nice outfit on, but I was wearing shorts at home. I changed to dress up to go and speak, right? And I said, you know, I just want to hear from the guys for a second. Here's what I was wearing before. And I told them, I said, look, very nice. Would it be appropriate for me to wear it here? and why? And across the board, the boys, all of them were raising their hand because they're middle school kids. So I want to say something.
Oh, yeah.
They're sharing, you know, no, it wouldn't be appropriate. And here's why. They basically reasoned out the fact that, well, you're dressing to come and see us. You're coming to a church. You're presenting in front of a lot of people. They'll be looking at you. Right. You're supposed to set a good standard as well.
Right. Absolutely. You know, it's funny. My wife and I talk about this all the time. But like, when do I get to start wearing dad clothes? Right? Because it used to be you got to be a dad, you're in your 40s, and you had a uniform. It was like Dockers and a polo. And that's
sweater vest.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sweater
right?
vest, Chris.
And now it's just not, there. Those lines of, it's not as clear. And so moms dress like teenage girls, dads, I'm sitting here in a t-shirt, so I can't really talk.
I was going to say, you've got your flash t-shirt, essentially.
Right, yeah, exactly. But, you know, and so that we've lost those sort of boundaries between childhood and adolescence, the clear boundaries that we used to have just by dress code, right? Mm-hmm. And then you wonder, well, why are we seeing the issues we're seeing in schools where you've got teachers in illicit relationship with students? Because teachers dress like students now. Yeah. Right. And so, you know, when your teacher wore a tie or like a kind of a business sort of outfit, it was clear that they were an authority figure. Mm-hmm. They're in a different position than a student who is dressed like a student.
Where have all the ties gone?
Oh, I don't know.
that unbuttoned first two buttons. Some of you are unbuttoning your shirts a little too low. I mean,
I'm a swarthy man, so I don't do the low V-necks or the tie button thing.
But, you know, coming back to this, you know, I want to focus a little bit on what's happening for women, because there's a lot of pressure as we talk a lot about about pornography. We're not talking enough about sexting. And I'll just tell a funny kind of sad story at the same time here. So I grew up in a small mountain community, and I remember this girl decided she really wanted the attention of one of the guys. He wasn't giving it to her. Well, finally, she sends a nude picture to this young man. Well, it ends up being, you guys, and this is real. This happens all the time. I hear your stories when you contact me about past mistakes that, you know, a lot of people have made. You're not alone. There's a lot of pressure. But essentially, where this girl then sends it to the guy happens to be a volunteer at the fire station. And so he then shows it to some of the other guys. They're in high school. Well, then next thing you know, this phone's circling its way around to all of the different fire chief firemen there. Well, guess what? Her dad worked at the fire department. And not only was he caught looking, but he was caught with an image of his daughter.
Oh, sweet mercy.
And I mean, the story comes full circle, the culpability on the father's part for looking and the culpability on the daughter's part. And then all of the men who have now shared this.
You know, I was talking to my son and I said, there are things we have to talk about that I never talked to my dad about. Right. And we were having a conversation as I was taking him to practice. And one of the things that he brought up was they had just had an assembly at the school about sexting, because mm-hmm. that had happened on campus. Somebody had sent a picture and then it got shared around the school, and so they had to have everybody come in. Parents, I say this to parents all the time. Like, there is immense pressure on your kids to do this stuff. Whether they're mm-hmm. boys or girls, there's pressure to be engaged in it. That's why the smartphone you're giving your kid, you need to give it to them and meter it out over time. You just don't mm-hmm. hand it to them and say you're off on your own. You may give them the smartphone and say, you know what, I want you to learn how to use it as a communication device first, so the camera's not even enabled on it right now. Mm-hmm. That, why not? Or if the camera's going to be enabled, make sure that you've got a computer somewhere in the house that's receiving all the texts that are going in and out of that phone. It's not hard to set up so that you can review it, right? But you don't just hand this incredibly powerful, unthinkable device to an 11-year-old and say, hey, you're on your own.
I'm going to push back here because I hear this from a lot of people, because I think when I have children, I'm going to be super strict with technology.
Sure.
And I hear people who respond, Timmy, like, you can't monitor everything and it's a violation of privacy for these kids. And I just go, what privacy? Why do they have that right? How do you respond to that? Because you're monitoring all of your kids' tech.
Oh, sure, right. And for now, I mean, they're young. I kind of like to bring back to the people I talk to. Well, do you remember back in the 90s, you know, in ancient times, when my son said this the other day, he goes, oh yeah, that was back in the 1900s, Dad. And I wanted to slap him. But you know, in the 90s, in my home at least, I knew whenever I talked to a girl on the phone, there was a 98% chance my brother was listening.
Listening in.
Right?
Because
who doesn't know that? Who doesn't remember when, if you grew up in that time, you'd be on the phone and a sibling would get on, your parents would get on and say, get off the phone, I'm waiting for a phone call. Or if call waiting rings in, you better answer it, right? And so that sense of anonymity didn't exist, right? And it does now. Your children have a right to privacy. But you need to teach and give that to them. Right now, there you are the steward of those children. And you need to take that responsibility very seriously. Those aren't your kids. They're God's kids. And mm-hmm. and you know, the way you measure out that responsibility, you teach them to handle it, is very important. Again, I say this all the time. You wouldn't give your kids the car keys and say, all right, good luck. You're going to drive with them. You're going to teach them. You're going to walk with them. And then you're going to hand the keys over to them when they're responsible enough to handle them.
You know, asceticism is very popular in the Christian lifestyle. And that is where it's severe self-discipline in order to become a better person, right? To be more virtuous, to be more focused on God, to really simplify our lives. Well, I was looking at the catechism the other day, and it talked about how an even more firm and strict version of this is required during childhood and adolescence.
Right.
And yet we say, well, the child needs to have rights, or they should be free to experiment and explore their bodies. Well, that goes exactly against the Christian mindset.
Well, and it doesn't make any sense with the way we know the brain develops either, mm-hmm. right? Until you're 25, 27, you're ruled by the passion center of your brain. You don't think of long-term consequences. And so discipline comes in to keep you safe, mm-hmm. right? And parents give that discipline to their children so that they can develop habits that are going to serve them the rest of their life. If you don't give that to them, what you're saying is be ruled by your emotions, by lust, by anger, by pride, all those things. That just doesn't make sense.
You know, I keep thinking about old school flirting and the lack of privacy that you had when you had that cord and anyone could be listening in.
Yeah.
Remember when you had the cordless phone? I mean, that was exciting.
You could never find it.
Well, and then there are also like five of them, so then anyone could be listening
Absolutely.
In any room.
Yeah.
But there was anonymity in the sense that we still had private phone numbers. And so you could call people. And I remember, you know, as a kid, things that I don't think kids enjoy today to the same extent, calling that person you like and just sitting there quiet, or prank calling them.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Just being on the phone for 2 hours or 2-3 hours just on the phone, you know, again, and now kids will do that. They text in the same thing, but it isn't the same. You know, I'm going to say about the anonymity too, like there's way too much privacy in our lives. And that's a modern thing. And if you look at back in human history, like in towns, everybody knew each other's business because everything was public. You had to go to you didn't have an oven in your home. You went to the central place in town to bake or to mill your wheat or whatever. And so the talk was there. People knew what was going on. They were more involved in each other's lives. I've adopted this for myself. You know, we use Covenantizer on our computer. I have monitoring on my computer what I'm doing. And my friends, if I'm doing something illicit, will get an update on that so they can call me and say, whoa, right? Nobody needs the freedom to look at porn. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Nobody needs the freedom to look at things they shouldn't be looking at. That's okay to say. And again, I'm not worrying if I've got a problem. I want my kids to know. I want my wife to know. I want people I talk to know that I don't think anyone deserves those freedoms.
Well, and it's important to think back and point back to not just back in the day, but also to other cultures today where
sure.
they're living in one room homes. They're living where, even if it's not a one room home, where they're all sleeping together. I was just talking to someone the other day, and she had a friend who adopted children from a part of Asia, and they brought the children here, and those children are used to sleeping on a mat in their parents' room. And
right.
so they were having a hard time adapting to being here in the United States. And it wasn't until they were put on mats in the parents' room that they felt comfortable. Many cultures today still live in that one room type of environment.
Yeah. You know, it's Francis Chan's book, Crazy Love, talks a little bit about this, that the reality of our Western experience of these, you know, thousands, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 square foot homes, you may think, well, I'm just middle class. No, no, no. You are the richest person in the world compared to someone living in East Asia or in Central America or Africa.
You know, I remember as a child, I loved the option of always being able to have that door closed if I wanted, especially as I was a teenager, you know, this desire for privacy, especially coming from this introvert here. But, you know, I think about it, we really, this idea of not only me time, but of closing everyone out is so problematic, as you're talking about the fact that your computer shouldn't even be private.
Right. Absolutely. And again, it's contrary to human it's contrary to the way we were developed. We were created for community. We were created for love. We were created to be known and to know, right? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, everybody needs privacy every now and then, go for a walk. But then you're not blocking off the world. You're opening up your mind to all of those things that are going around you. You're making connections and you're forming yourself.
I'm still going to throw it out there. Pick up the phone and call at least one person. Give us a call out. Let us know how that was for you.
You can listen to more of Trending via the podcast on iTunes or the iHeartRadio app, where you can share your favorite episodes. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery.
So one of the things that stood out to me on the whole issue of sexting and pornography is that a vast number of girls are actually willing to participate in sexting. And of the young women who are sexting, 90% of them said it was unwanted consensual sexting. So they responded, they maybe gave that image, however risque it might have been, but it was unwanted and they consented. But again, this idea of unwantedness, Chris.
Oh, yeah. Because they feel like that's just what you do.
Yeah.
It's become, and I hate that, but there's a normalization of this. And again, pornography plays a huge role in this because it's formed the expectation on the part of young men and on young women of what's normal, right? And so they've engaged in, again, if you start looking at porn when you're 9 years old or 7 years old and you have a steady diet of that into adolescence, then you think that this is just normal stuff, mm-hmm. right? And it's not.
And you don't realize the burden that's being placed. And, you know, we can look at this. I look at it from two perspectives for the young woman. On one side, a lot of the young women say that they're trying to avoid conflict. They're trying to, you know, really avoid that conflict. But on the other side, there are women who just want to be seen.
Oh, yeah. It's a tragic thing that you want to be loved. You want someone to want you, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying want you in the physical sense, you know, but like to want you, right? And I think this is how I do it. This is how I get that attention. And unfortunately, it works. It mm-hmm. gets attention, but it's not lasting.
Well, and so many young women who want to be wanted, they want to be loved, think that they cheapen it, right? They're willing to give away their sexuality, give away their virginity, interact sexually because they think that that's getting them in the direction of what they want. And then the next day, and this is something you hear over and over again, those girls commonly talk about that college dorm room the next day. No one say, no, I'm so glad I did that last night. A lot of them have a lot of regret, discomfort, yeah. uneasiness, worried about who's going to find out.
Right. And it's, we always say the young women are pressured into it. I think we have to acknowledge that there are a lot of young men who've been victimized this too, because they've become victims of our culture, mm-hmm. right? If you're a 11-year-old child or a 13-year-old or a 16-year-old looking at pornography, if two people walked in and started doing that in front of you, that would be a crime, right? Mm-hmm. It would be wrong. It would be criminal. If an adult walked in and said, hey, look at this, that's a crime. Right. And mm-hmm. so that what you're dealing with is young people who are victims of the pornographic culture. Mm-hmm. Like I honestly, it doesn't make sense that we're not prosecuting pornographers who are putting this stuff out there that we know that young people are accessing. Right. Mm-hmm. And but they're not. But could a kid go in a store and buy it? No. Right. Because that's mm-hmm. illegal. Right?
But it's available for 3 seconds on Snapchat or however long you want. Maybe you might be able to take a screenshot.
Right. And so here's the thing about like the sexting, right? Like it's just a normal part of adolescence now, and it shouldn't be. And I'm not saying that's right. And so as parents, again, I hate having to have these conversations with my kids, but I have to. I have to talk to my son. I have to talk to my daughters. I have to do it. And it's such a balance between protecting their innocence and protecting them.
Yeah, it's so hard too because I have a lot of adults. Well, I'm thinking about sending my kid to your talk, and I'm at the point where I say, I'm going to be really frank with you. 5 years ago, I wouldn't necessarily send your 12-year-old to all of this, but we're at the point where your 12-year-old, if you're not sharing the information, someone else is.
Oh, and, absolutely.
You know, I look at the example of a number of young women in my life who, starting at 12 and 13, they had multiple images of a man's you-know-what being sent to them.
Right.
And luckily, in these cases, and I don't know how long the response was, but eventually they end up going to a parent-type figure. What the heck do I do?
Well, and the reality is, if you're not forming your child's worldview, the culture mm-hmm. will be more than happy to do so. Yeah. And I go back to this idea of worldview so often. Like, your job is to communicate a way to view the world to your children, to role model that, to discuss that with them, to let them understand why, right? Mm-hmm. And to take their questions. And, you know, there's one of the things, I think it's wonderful. It's weird in a sense, because I would have never done this, but it's wonderful in another sense. My son, my daughter, like, they'll be driving home with their mom and they'll say, hey, mom, I've heard this word a lot. I know it's a bad word. I don't know what it means, right? Mm-hmm. Why do people say it? They have that relationship with their mom, right?
Oh, I've heard some great stories in that context.
Right. Yeah. Or, you know, or we'll be listening to the radio and something will come up and a word like pornography comes up. And what is that? Well, it's when someone, you know, how do you explain that to a young child? But they're being exposed to it. So it's like when people act like they're married, but they're not married. And then they take pictures of it. I mean, it's, you know, it's a weird, you know, how do you do that? You know, but like this idea of we can't hide. We can't stick our heads in a hole and pretend like it's not happening. It is happening. And we have to start having hard conversations with our tweens, with our adolescents.
I have a friend who's very modest, and I remember her talking about driving that old station wagon. She had her two squirrely little boys in the very back row being naughty back there. And the five-year-old yells to the mom, the eight-year-old sitting next to him, "Hey, Mom, what's this thing called a condom?" And the other boy, who's eight, goes, "Oh, it's a balloon for your bleep." And the mom is just bright red. She said, "I did not have a single word to communicate because I was so uncomfortable." And while it might be funny now, I'm sitting here going, I don't know what to say to my kid because I'm uncomfortable.
Right. But the problem is you can't just go, "We're not going to talk about that," because someone will. And so how do you age appropriately talk about these things? There's a part of the sexting I think needs to be mentioned too. I don't think kids think about this, and maybe adults don't think about it either. It's illegal to send images of minors over the internet. I mean, that's mm-hmm. child pornography. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I you know, if you're a teen receiving that and sending it, you're engaging in the distribution of child pornography, and you can be prosecuted in a lot of municipalities. And so that's something that needs to be said. And it's a conversation to have with your kids too, your daughter, your son. Like, you could, this could seriously affect the rest. It's not just embarrassing. It's a criminal act.
Mm-hmm. We need authorities to make some examples of this. It might wake kids up. You know, I remember we were just talking this weekend about how people used to pirate music all the time, right? And how eventually it got to the point where a small number of people got in really big trouble. They didn't prosecute all the people they had evidence on, but it sent the example, and fewer people do it today than they did before.
Right. And again, you know, what's the spiritual implication? Well, what you're looking at here is an image and likeness of the living God made by God's hands to reflect his glory. And that is being profaned. Right. And, you know, we don't profane what God has made sacred. Well, God looked at humanity and he said, it's good. And now we're using that for our own pleasure. We're selling it. We're destroying that image in a lot of respects.
You know, that's Chris Mueller. I'm Timmy Millington. Good to have you here listening with us. Thank you for joining. You know, Chris, one of the things that really, really aggravated me, I interviewed last year, I think I was subbing for the Patrick Madrid show, and we interviewed Mark Rignaris, who is the author of Cheap Sex. And he talks about how pornography and contraception, two main technologies that have impacted sex, how they have led to this cheap sex mentality. And the main point that he kept emphasizing that really annoyed me, but essentially I got over, is that he talks about how it's really women who control the yes or no to sex, and it's whether how much she's willing to allow, and it's a huge burden placed on women. And that's what annoyed me, is at the end of the day we have to say men are called to more, but the reality is, no matter which way you slice it, if women are willing to take a firmer stand, men will learn to respect it or leave.
You know, I just saw another article on this earlier this week. Is this idea of the economy of sex, right? Mm-hmm. And it has become cheap. And because women, yeah, it's been given away without any expectation of any sort of responsibility in turn.
Right.
Right. And I absolutely agree with that. And you're right, men, I'm raising my young men to be better, right? I'm raising my young women to understand their value, right? To not give away. But I also know lots and, you know, a number of young women who are now entering their 30s who are trying to live chaste lives, and they're having a very difficult time finding young men who are marriageable, because that's just not the economy that they're living in.
We're going to be talking about this actually a little bit on the next segment. We're going to be talking about, is chivalry dead and why men don't want to date women? And I think we have some answers to that. Before we do, I want to talk for just a second about friendship. A number of you, it's probably the most common topic that I hear from you guys. I love hearing from you, friends, because it gives me an idea of what you're struggling with, and that is friendships. And so I want to start with throwing out this quote from St. Clair of Assisi that came to me this week that I have just been chewing on, and I put the full version of the quote on my Twitter and Facebook, but it's this: we become what we love, and who we love shapes what we become. I'm going to repeat that one more time because I know you guys are listening just to chew on it. We become what we love, and who we love shapes what we become. So I was looking at this, and it's so true. You know, we become what we love. And so the question is, what do you love in the world today? You know, are we just spending hours of our life on social media? Or maybe we're enjoying some really great social media accounts like the ones that posted this. Are we loving friends who pull us down or who build us up and expect better of us?
Right. One of my good friends, Father Mike Schmitz, I've witnessed him love people. And it's very much, it's the closest thing I can imagine to John Paul II, because I've witnessed him just be so present to people, just really just giving them his full attention and just receiving them as if he's receiving Christ. And it really is inspiring to watch and to be around him for a weekend, because he just does. And he meets thousands of people, but he just, it's like each one of them, he's saying, this is Jesus, right? Mm-hmm. And again, you love who you're loving in that person, or you're loving Christ in that person.
And I don't want you guys to hear this and think, oh, that's cute, that's cliche. He's seen Jesus in the other person. He's truly choosing to see a person before him. Cutting aside everything else, he's seen the person before him. And that selfless love, that willingness to listen, is so fundamental, I think, in that development of friendship.
Right. Now, there's this idea of, we love every person we come in encounter with. We love our friends. We love Christ in them. You love the homeless person. You love Christ in them. Like St. Francis, he saw a leper. He was repulsed by the leper. And then he was so ashamed, he climbed down and he chose to embrace that person, right? Mm-hmm. And he was very clear, and he found Jesus in that person. He met Jesus in that person. We're called to do that. However, we are also called to surround ourselves with community. Right? We're also called to surround ourselves with the body of Christ, the church, our family in the church, so that we can lift each other up. Our worldview should not be being formed by the culture we live in, but by the community that we're part of, our churches. And so often we've traded that for the soccer field, or for our activities or our workplaces, and or quite frankly, for Netflix, right? Mm. And so there is that idea of, I'm going to love everybody, you know, and I'm going to go out and I'm going to witness Christ love to people and try to love Christ in those people. But I also need to surround myself with a band of brothers, people who will lift me up as well.
Chris and Timmery will be right back. Tweet them at C Mueller Tweets, spelled M-U-E-L-L-E-R, and at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
Love hearing from you guys. It's sometimes like receiving letters from a good old friend just on social media. And my friend here, Jim, who listens to the show, was commenting on friendship and how we talk a lot about friendship, and we talk about, you know, making good friendships, people who build you up, but also going out and impacting others. And he talked about, it reminds me of St. Paul in some ways, and the level of development of grace and virtue. But essentially, he's talking about how, you know, when you're not as strong as in your faith, you really need to be surrounded by very good people.
This comes back to the idea of forming worldview, right? As parents, mm-hmm. It's our responsibility to help our children form a worldview. And again, as an adult, I want to surround myself by good, holy people, but I should also be reading good, holy books. You know, I should be reading the lives of the saints. I should be reading exhortation. I should be reading things that are forming my mind and my heart and my soul, right? And so that I can go bring that into my relationships. I shouldn't just be kind of sort of consuming what's around me and having, you know, and not consciously choosing how I'm going to be formed.
I love that you didn't just reduce it to friendships of people living, but as crazy as that is in the Catholic worldview, but of our deceased brothers and sisters and heroes of the faith. And, you know, I love listening to a lot of the different books, especially from Formed. Maybe your parish subscribes to Formed, but they have a ton of audiobooks and videos. And I was just watching a video of St. Felicitine Perpetua and their story. Grant, it was a cartoon. I just listened. But just hearing their story, right? And those saints, and how it's a reminder that at Mass, during the consecration, during the celebration of the Eucharist, all of the heavenly bodies, both saints and angels, are present with us in those pews at that moment.
Yeah, I took a course from Franciscan University, and Dr. Martin was saying how we've fallen into this trap of the tyranny of the living, right? And as a Catholic, we understand that we're part of this much bigger church, right? There are those who are unified with Christ in heaven. There are the souls in purgatory. There's us here, the living. And it seems so silly to think that me, in my modern context, have all of the wisdom gathered unto myself because of the interweb and smartphones, that I've forgotten that no, other people have walked this human life, walked with Christ, and they've done it in much more heroic ways than I have up to this point. And why would I deny that? Why wouldn't I choose to go to them to seek their friendship?
Right. And then to see from them a model for how we should be towards others and some of the expectations we should place on others. Because these holy saints had other friends a lot of the time that were also holy saints. And you get to witness their writings and their friendships and the commentary on each other.
Right. Now, none of that is to say, you know, like when I encounter the transsexual individual, right, I should encounter that person with love. I should encounter that person like I've just met Jesus, because I have, right? That's where he's told me I will find him, right? When I encounter the very flamboyant clerk, you know, that person should get nothing from me but the love of Christ. Mm-hmm. And so while we want to surround ourselves with community, the lives of saints, all those things, again, if I'm not willing to climb off my horse and hug the leper, I've missed the point, right? And Francis gives us such a beautiful model of that. I would say, like, if you're not willing to love the person struggling with same-sex attraction, the person struggling with gender identity, then I don't know that you've got a right or to talk and to speak on these issues, right?
Absolutely.
Because the voice of the church always comes from love. Right. Yeah. And Jesus, when he gives us truth, he's not giving us truth from condemnation. He's giving us truth from love. We reject the truth. That's where we find condemnation. Right. But the truth comes from love. It doesn't come from condemnation.
Well, when people use excuses, oh, I felt uncomfortable, I didn't know what to say. Well, why don't you start with talking about maybe what you bought or how their day is, or telling them what you're doing? You know, I have the checker, Jerry. I'm always sitting here going, okay, what did I do today? It's Sunday. I went to mass today. And I remember, you know, we probably live radically different lifestyles, but he went, oh, that's so beautiful.
Right.
That opened up a conversation with someone who probably, I'm going to guess, grew up Catholic and is living a very different lifestyle today. Who knows what seed that might plant?
Well, again, man created in the image and likeness of God. What that tells us that in every human being, God wants to reveal something about himself to us. When we encounter any human being, God is revealing something about himself, and it's a unique something because no two human beings are alike, each one created in the image and likeness of God. Don't forget that. When you encounter someone, even someone who's dealing with different things or whatever it is, God's still being revealed through them. And you don't say, I can't learn anything or I can't encounter him here. And you may just learn how to love in a sacrificial way, but don't miss the lesson.
I think that for me, one of the things that really helped was sidewalk counseling. I started sidewalk counseling when I was in high school. And I remember really making sure that we were prayerful, praying to the Holy Spirit. Good Lord, this woman's about to abort her child. What can I say that really makes a difference? She's hardened by the time she's in front of that abortion clinic to the point where she's not necessarily even hearing what you're saying. Lord, help me because my words are not strong enough. Well, maybe you're talking to a friend, a family member, or that checker at the grocery store, and you're going, okay, Lord, Holy Spirit, come. Guardian angel, help me to communicate with this person. And I think we realize a lot of the time that it's A, simpler than we think, and B, we just have to listen.
Right. You know, the echo chamber of social media, these algorithms that funnel us toward people who think the same about politics or social issues or all those things, that's all well and good. But we can't forget that the people who are outside of that echo chamber are still people, still beloved of God. God still died for them, right? And God still calls us to bring that love to them, that they might that they might help and receive it. And that's a challenging thing. So I'm saying, yeah, it's a good thing to have people, friends who have different beliefs, friends who are struggling with different issues than you are, but the other side of that is you need to be very consciously forming your worldview. We just don't go get in the river and swim with it. We have to take up a place and gain the strength to swim against it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, I want to shift gears here. There was this piece that came out recently. I was looking at how men don't want to date modern women. And with that, the question was, is chivalry dead? Well, there was this clip that came out on Fox News. Suzanne Vinker was a guest, and she was writing about the topic of chivalry and how, well, is it harmful for men and women? That was kind of some of the response. I want to play this clip here of Suzanne Vinker when she's being interviewed about a telegram that a friend of hers had found from some deceased family members.
Suzanne, you wrote this op-ed. Wendy, I know you've read it. I've read it. And you compare a telegram that was sent to a woman right before she got married to a Facebook video. The first one I want to read is back in the day, back in 1954, your friend, her mother just recently died. Your friend was going through a memorabilia. She finds this telegram and it says, this is the husband writing it to his soon-to-be wife. Darling, I shall be waiting for you at 8 with a lifetime of expectancy. My heart will be coming with you down the aisle. May God be with us tonight. As we pray, we will always be with him. Thank you for becoming my wife. My love forever yours, Henry.
you know, Chris, I look at this telegram and, you know, it's back in a time where every single one of those words cost something. And he's speaking to his bride the night before he's going to get married. And just this endearing language, darling, right? I'm looking forward to marrying you. Mm-hmm. And this chivalry and this thoughtfulness and him reaching out to her right before she may be nervous or excited or whatever it might be.
Right. You know, the gallantry, mm-hmm. right? How much have we just lost that? And it's funny because I think we've lost it, not just between men and women, but just in culture in general. Go back and read letters people wrote during the Civil War, right?
Right.
You know, or the way we used to communicate with one another. There was a decorum. There was I don't want to idealize the past, but there was just a level of respect, mm-hmm. right? We've lost it.
And even that deep level of affection between friends, especially young girls, this deep affection. Today, I think people are afraid to be too close because of how they might be perceived.
Oh, sure.
But that affection and that delight in the friendship is a good thing. And you shouldn't be afraid of what people might think, as people are thinking all kinds of stupid things today.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I've mentioned before, I love Sherlock Holmes and I tend to read through them often. But to see the love between Holmes and Watson, you know what I mean? And it is such a filial affection, right?
Right.
They're brothers. They love each other, you know, and in their imperfections. They get angry, they argue, but then they come back and there's just this just unabashed affection for one another.
And that example is so ironic because in the BBC version, the affection, the relationship's so close, but they'll make comments and jokes about people thinking that they're gay because they're so
absolutely,
close.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
So what? You know, you have to come back. So what? You know, that's not who we are. That's not what we live. And, you know, I think that you really talking about the fact that chivalry, gallantry needs to enter into all of our friendships, because how will they be within our male-female friendships if we don't have them there?
Oh, and again, look at your scriptural examples, you know, the way that God talks about his beloved, right? You know, and just the passion of that. And again, I think part of this is we've become less literary in a sense. So we don't speak, we don't read, we don't think those ways, right? And so for me to come out to my wife and to write a letter like this, it would just be weird, right? Because it's just not the way people think or speak anymore.
But we've allowed that to happen. You know, this is kind of a funny story. I remember I was finishing a college course and it was the end of the quarter and I was leaving and one of the professors was saying, "Have a great vacation, Timmy. We'll see you when you come back." And I said, "I shall. Thank you." And everyone in the room just started laughing hysterically.
Yeah.
And I remember I was so mortified because I didn't know what they were laughing at. And I kind of have to look at someone and go, "What's wrong?" And they said, "Well, you said I shall."
Yes. Yes, I shall return. Yes. Yeah. But it's funny though, you know, I find myself reading like Lewis and my language will change, right? Mm-hmm. Or I find myself reading Chesterton, my language will change. And I like it, you know, and I'll find when I sit down to write my blogs, all of a sudden I'm like, "Well, I'm be quite elevated." My wife will say, what were you thinking when you wrote this one? I was like, "Oh, I've just been reading a lot of C.S. Lewis," you know, and it changes your language or, you know, Tolkien or whatever. Yeah.
Well, and I feel like we can't use a lot of words that are really fancy and sophisticated because then people have no idea what we're talking about. So then I find myself using the word, but then explaining what the word means just in case, because I would be that clueless person that had no idea what it meant.
Well, and again, you look at this letter this person wrote, this darling, you know, she'll be waiting for you. Then you contrast that to modern music, mm-hmm. right, where everything is relegated to sex. And it's all very graphic. It's all very, you know, and again, these people probably had very, very warm feeling towards one another in a sexual way too, but they express it in very genteel terms, right? In a sense, it's like by keeping things covered, they become more enriched.
Absolutely. Well, when we talk about, so men don't want to date modern women. Men want to date women who appreciate chivalry. And women, guess what, guys? We are looking for men who are chivalrous.
Oh, absolutely. And so, guys, don't be afraid to really honor and cherish the woman in your life. Don't be afraid to be that example of that shining knight.
This has been Trending with Chris and Timmery. To learn more about Chris Mueller or Timmery Millington, or to book either of them to speak at your upcoming event, visit everydaycatholic.com or timmery.com.